deprives you of something.
Not because he wants you to daven so you can get it, because he wants your davening. The goal is the davening. The purpose of a human being is to daven. That a means to an end. That's what we've been saying. So what are you going to chacham for? What are you going to God for? So he says the God, the person you're going to, the tzaddik you're going to, has to be able to evaluate who you are. If you're somebody that can withstand the nesoya, and he has to let you withstand the nesoya and go daven. If you're not, then he has to give you things that will chazak you and make you feel better. His job's there to help you.
That's all.
Those are the two different diagrams. The tzaddik goes of Hakadosh Baruch Hu makayim. That's the lower level. Person can't handle a proper nesoya. I mean, I don't know, but nesoyness here. Person is not masugal to handle the nesoyin at the higher level, so then you have to have tzaddik goes of Hashem makayim. But if a person's holding and the tzaddik sees you have somebody that can withstand, so then we maintain the ideal level, which is a kosh bochur goes in the tzaddik's makayim.
What does masugal
mean? Able to.
Segol.
It's one of those words that's hard to translate. Segula really means treasure. So it's something, it's a gula, it's a treasure, it's something which you use to help you or whatever. Say someone's masuba, we mean he's able, he has the ability to do a certain thing. He's endowed with, I think would maybe be a... Which leaves us the last paragraph. And then we can start... Perik Hay, okay. Ulam Kamu... The last paragraph. Hey, like we said, they and your tachlis. The tachlis is not tzaddik goes of Hakadosh Baruch Hu makayim. Other rabbi, on the contrary, the dor achris hayomim, in the generation at the end of days, that's this generation, kasher nistam kol chazayin ve'en utani yodei adma, when all nistam, where all the yeah, blocked, yeah, but chazon, when all the all hope, when all the clarity, maybe from chazon to see chazi, chayza, I think maybe, I don't know if that's where the word comes from. V'ainu tani v'bad ma, we don't know what's going on. Ika tafkideinu, our main job, hu l'kabalas kol abo aleinu, v'tmimus. It's for us to accept everything that's happening with tmimus. L'lo shaylos v'lo tmimus. Without questions, without wonderments. Alayna lechshov, kachu rotzen Hashem. Enayna mesugolim amlam lahavim zois. This is the rotzen Hashem. We're unable to understand this. Ach hakol na'ase l'man tovaseinu, hanitzchis. Zeh yikol, it's a Mashiach. It's all being done for our eternal good. And it's bringing Mashiach. I want to say one thing here. I'm sure he would agree, but I'm saying it. And if he doesn't agree, he doesn't agree. I'm happy to argue on this nekuda that I'm saying now. And that is, this sounds like a very sort of like fatalistic way of living your life. It's like, okay, so that's what happened. Like total no curiosity whatsoever. I'm allowed to be curious. I might not have the answers, but a Yid who stops being curious and stops trying to want to understand, there's a problem there. You have to know you can't understand. And at the same time, try and understand.
Isn't that futile?
No. Because the curiosity itself and the questions you ask create their own patterns. Give an example. We raised it at the open forum today. The guys walking around in the world today, quite happy to die to kill me. They're called suicide bombers, yeah? And he's doing it in the name of God. He doesn't just come and kill me because he's a barbarian and wants to get rid of me. He's doing it because that's God's will, and he's going to get this enormous reward going from in Shammai. Now, I can turn around and say, wow, okay, that's what Hashem wants. That's what Hashem wants. I'm not. Yeah, I don't understand that. Or I can go, wow, I know what that's about. Why would Hashem use somebody to kill me who's ready to die, because that's not normal. Usually people want to live. He wants to get rid of you so he can live better. But he's getting rid of you, so his life's going to be better. Why is he killing you? Who's he killing you for? His children? I'm saying, who's he killing you for? Why is he prepared to die to kill you? Well, you kill somebody because you're trying to improve your life somehow. You've got a neighbor who plays loud music at night. And you want to sleep, so you kill him so that you can sleep. You don't kill yourself in order to kill him so that there's no more music. Does that make any sense, right? So, I've got to get curious. Hashem's world has to make sense at some point. So, I try to get curious. That's very interesting. What do I learn from this? Now, I may not be able to learn anything from it. And it's not going to change the way I live my life. That's what Hashem is doing. That's what he is. Fine, good. But if I'm just totally immune to what's going on in the world, then what am I living for? Then the world can't tell me anything. Then what's going on in the world, there's nothing to teach me and nothing to tell me. I've just got to cocoon myself off and just live with like an ostrich with my head in the sand. That's probably what pshat is. That means I have to know, I can't understand Hashem's ways, but I can be curious. Oh, I wonder what that's about. Isn't that interesting? Slowly, you might actually learn something new about a Kosh Bochut. You have somebody that you love very dearly. You want to get to know them, you want to get close to them. Now, you know you can never fully understand another human being. So you just give up. Well, they don't understand it, so what the heck, why even try? You're not going to build a relationship. You get friendships, you don't even understand your friends, you don't understand whatever. You get married. You're married, so you understand your wife, you understand your wife. You got no chance, but you understand. So you stop being curious, you stop trying to understand, you stop. No! You try, they tell you build a relationship. A certain amount of knowledge. You don't need to know someone to love them, you still got to love them, you still got to do what Hashem says, you still got to come what he does between us. But not at the expense of curiosity. How are you going to learn a black tomorrow if you're not curious? Well, Rashi doesn't make any sense. Well, I'm a Kabbalah Ta'ava. That's it, you know. Yeah, but Rashi over here says 101 is 2, and over here says 101 is 3. That doesn't make any sense. Don't ask questions. This is not Cheder. This is not Israeli education. Tell you've got to be curious. You've got to hold on a second. What's going on here? So it's a sense of humor to be able to learn properly and understand the world properly. Rashi is any different to looking at an event going on in the world? Well, Moshe Shapiro, every Thursday night Shmuz is based on what's going on in the world, and he looks at it and he tries to show you Chazal what's going on. I'm trying to explain it, trying to understand it. Not to the point where we're going to know it's going to be in the future, but to understand the now, a person has to be curious. He needs to be asking the questions. Stop asking questions, you're dead. I mean, so I don't think when he says, yeah, Kahu Ratzon Hashem. That's the Ratzon Hashem, and I don't understand it, and I'll never understand it. It's for my good, but now I want to understand what's going on. I think we brought the raya for this from Yosef, when Yosef's in prison. Yosef's in an Egyptian prison. Can't be the most pleasant experience. You know, prisons look like today. You know, in the enlightened world, they're not the most pleasant experience. Imagine what an Egyptian prison 3,500 years ago looked like. You know. In a pit, in a hole, no different to what they have in Syria today and all these places, you know, it's a Thailand prison or whatever. These are hell holes. Yosef comes down one morning and he sees that the two Egyptian ministers are looking a bit downtrodden. So he says, what's the matter? What's wrong? You guys okay? No, we had a dream and there's no one to explain it. So Yosef says, no, well, Hashem explains it. There's no one here that can explain it. Hashem explains it. So finally, tell me the dream. What do you mean? You just told them you can't explain it. Hashem explains dreams. So what are you asking them to tell you the dream for? Then you come to me and say, Rob, I had a terrible dream. Can you interpret it for me? And I say to you, Jamie interprets dreams. What was your dream about? What must I tell you? You just told me you can't do anything with it. So that's the possible there. The possible is not too much sense. So pshat is there. Hashem interprets dreams. We don't understand the world. We don't understand what Hashem wants or whatever. But tell me the dream. Maybe I can help. I get curious or something. There was an empathetic aspect there in Achinami. There is that, and we learned that out definitely. That's when you teach counseling for dummies or counseling 101 to these new guys going out there in the Elif or whatever, that's the first thing you teach them is that piece of Yosef. You tell them, you don't understand, the guy comes to you with a problem, you don't understand, but you ask him, you know, tell me the problem anyway. You know, let me try at an empathetic level. But there's something else going on here. He's curious. Hashem will interpret the dream, but tell it to me anyway. Maybe I'll be the agent for Hashem to understand it. Maybe I'll be the one that megalas it. We have to be curious about the world. We have to be. If you're not curious, how do you understand anything? You're not asking questions. He's not saying you don't ask questions. He's saying don't ask questions. You know what I said? Eli understood what I said. Anybody else get what I said? He's saying don't ask questions. Don't ask questions. Yeah, but you have to ask questions. Depends what kind of questions you ask. Where was Hashem in the Holocaust? Shush. Hashem was in the Holocaust. It happened. It was best. Do we understand it? We don't understand it. Am I allowed to be curious and say, what's Hashem in the Holocaust? Of course I'm allowed to be curious. Of course I'm allowed to be curious, otherwise I have nothing to learn from the event. By the way, I just remembered, this business of going being prepared to kill themselves in order to kill us, there's a precedent for it, you know that? David HaMelech brings it down in Tehillim. I once mentioned to my Rebbe, I was in South Africa fundraising, I once mentioned to him, at the beginning of this whole Intifada thing, like, it's never happened before. That someone's prepared to die to kill a Yidden, the Nazis weren't prepared to kill themselves to kill us. They got the Poles to do it, and they got everyone else, just that they could say stuff. The Japs weren't going to kill Jews.
They're not Jews.
They're going to die themselves. Yeah. The kamikaze guys. Yeah. So he said to me, he said, it's not new at all. David HaMelech refers to it in Tehillim. It says, how does the pasuk go? Kidvarim. It says they surround us. B'shem Hashem ani ani kam. In hello. We said in hello. We said it this morning. No. They surround me like bees. In the name of Hashem, I cut them down. What's a bee?
He stings and he dies.
He stings you full well knowing that he's going to die. He's a suicide bomber. So he brought the rye from the Brisker Rov once. I can't remember exactly what the rye was, but that was what David HaMelech was referring to. There's a tekufa of our enemies. If you look in the psukim, it's going up in different stages. There's a tekufa where our enemies are even prepared to kill themselves in order to kill us. Kidvarim. So David HaMelech already had experienced it. So there's not a chiddush. They didn't machadish this concept. But you see that it's a different dagger of someone who's prepared to kill us. Amalek usually doesn't want to die in order to kill us. That's not Amalek's position. Haman wasn't prepared to get his nose dirty. He arranged for all the Nebuchadnezzar's guys to kill us. They were there organizing and making sure everything happened, the Esabonim of Haman, the generals or whatever. But generally speaking, the Nazis kept themselves so far from the front line.
And also,
there's a couple of
questions. It's so important for us to question and to ask and to be curious. Why is it so stifled in the FFB world?
Who says it is?
It seems very stifled in the Chedorim. You shouldn't ask.
It depends what kind of teachers. It depends on a lot of different factors. Those are usually personal issues. A Rebbe that's not prepared to take questions from a kid, usually it's a personal issue. He has his own insecurities, his own psychological problems or whatever. And the question you have to go back further is ask, why are there so many unqualified teachers in the Chedorim? That's the question you have to ask yourself. Why are there so few real mechanchim in the Chedorim? Now certain Chedorim have got a very high ratio of exceptionally good mechanchim. Exceptionally good. I mean, you have to go into the Yeshiva Gedolim and Yeshiva Ketanim to see that they must be doing something right. The quality of the kids that are being produced by far and large are unbelievably good. There's a percentage that falls through the floors, that falls through the cracks, there's no question. But it's not an enormous percentage. But certainly in the secular world in Israel, they did surveys recently, over 75% of the kids in Israel don't want to go to school, hate school, are too scared to go to school, felt that they never got anything out of school. One of the worst school systems in the world, okay? The Torah school education system, which is funded much less than the secular education system, the most kids are functioning pretty well. Okay? They function pretty well. They've been given tools to live the kind of lifestyle that are geared for them. You don't want to agree with that lifestyle. I'm going to agree with the lifestyle that they've been geared for. You know, fine, but it's a separate question. But they certainly, I mean, you go into the Shiva Gadolas and whatever, and generally speaking, the guys are functioning, doing pretty well through all the different stratas of society. Not everywhere is an MTI. Not everywhere is a Harvard. You can't. You've got to have your Boston. School for half brain dead kids and whatever, and you've got your Harvards and MTIs and whatever. It's the same as any society. You've got rangers. This place here is not a Harvard, you know. You go to Ponnage, you go to Tifrach, you go to Chevron, those are the MTIs, those are the Harvards, the Stanfords. You know, it's producing a range of people in a highly fluctuating, changing kind of environment. You've got your part-time schools, your art schools, your outside universities, you've got the Liverpool school, and you've got the this school and that school. I mean, the guy that got his doctor's degree at Harvard is a better qualified doctor than the guy that got his thing in the Soweto School of Medicine or whatever. You understand? but you're still producing good doctors.
The guy in America had more experience.
Yeah, but in a very limited range of, you know, removing X's from heads. Beruguaneth, yeah. No, Beersheba, they say Beersheba is one of the best hospitals we just could experience. In the world, it's probably the best burn department in the world, because they just, Rahmana Islam had to deal with so much.
What does Rahmana Islam mean?
Rahmana, that means Hashem should litzlan, should prevent it, should
from Lashem.
Rahmana, yeah, litzlan, Hatzil from Hatzalah. From Lashem to Bematzil. Hashem should spare us, should save us. The Rahmana meaning Hashem, Rahmana litzlan should spare us, save us. You know, it's a complicated question. A lot of the Rebbeim in the you're going to be able to bribe me one day with this thing terribly, huh? Please, this mustn't. Yeah, but even before you know anyone listen to it, you must ask me. The system is done in such a way that a guy who can't learn in Kollel anymore for whatever reason, he's a panasa, so where's he going to get a job and still maintain his respect in society? He's going to go teach in Cheder. Correct. That's one of the biggest, you know, employers of. I won't say failed of Reichim. Of Reichim, we need to move on. It's time to move on. Get a job, which is normal. You're supposed to move on and get a job. If I would get a job, either because of army or because of social pressures, etc., etc., whatever. Right. So he's going to get a respectable job, teaching Cheder. How does he teach in Cheder? The same way he was taught in Cheder. What's wrong with that? He turned out fine. Yeah, he did. He turned out fine. He's a fine guy. He's got a beautiful home, beautiful family. He's raising a nice family. So why can't he teach the way he was taught? Because the world's not the same anymore. The way the Rebbe taught him, if he would teach like that, he'd destroy the children he's teaching. The way his Rebbe taught him, he built him, he made him. It's a beautiful success. But he's going to teach the kids today the way he was taught, he's going to destroy those kids. So when you try and tell him, he says to you, what? I turned it okay, and that's what my Rebbe did. You try and explain to him that the world is not the same anymore. That the world in the last 10, 15 years has changed so much that if he would use the same tools that he got taught on the kids that he's teaching, he's going to destroy those kids. I'll show you one now. Yeah, I'll explain to you one now. I'll explain to you one now. Ah, the methodologies. Well, let me. I'll tell you what the problems are, and then you'll learn. You'll see. It's possible. It's not difficult. The question's like this: do we need to train Rebbeim to be Rebbeim? Should they have to go to some sort of training course in order to learn how to teach or not? Mitzadechadwa, my Rebbe never went to a training course. He learned from his Rebbe, and he just passed on. He learned from his Rebbe to his Talmud, and his Talmud took him on to his Talmud. And everybody worked out fine. By and large, the success was a success. What's called a success? 75%, 80%, or 100%. We're not looking for 100% in Golis. That's not our goal. Whatever's called a success, 70%, 80%, the kids came out fine. What's the problem? So I'll tell you what the problem is. By and large, the society that a kid was growing up in provided him with most of what he needed in terms of his hashkofa, his world outview, his support system. All the Rebbe needed to do was to give him the technical material. Chumash, gracious, Baruch Himas, Ramay Vesayet. Give him the material, hand it over to him. Society provided all the support system and all the knowledge that he knew that he needed to be sitting and learning. Correct? What was the job of the Rebbe? He was a Malamed. He was called a Malamed. What's a Malamed? Some of the teachers, you're the teachers. Mishnayos with a tight, with a niggun, with a song, and he teaches the Mishnayos and he hands it over to you the same way as Rebbe Akiva taught his Talmud. Chumash, precious, no? Kids used to come to Chayyab at 7 o'clock in the morning, go home at 7 o'clock at night, have a quick bath, get a sleep, wake up the next morning, we're happy, that's what they did. You need to train somebody to do that? No, as long as he knows the Chumash with a Rebbe's touch, you can teach. What's going on out there today? The kid has the whole world at his fingertips. the street is he's got the whole world. He's got choices. Who says I should learn Yechayda? Who says the Torah is true? Who says I should be doing this in the first place? Maybe they're right. Maybe I can also have all those fancy gadgets and tools and tech and all the beautiful stuff. Maybe that's there for me. That's what's going on in the kids today. You can't deny the street. These kids know what's going on. They're very bright. They're very bright. Even if you don't have a computer in your home, and you don't have a television in your home, you don't speak about it, and you don't have a cell phone, you have a cell phone with a hatchet. With all the walls you can build up there, I'm telling you now, they know what's going on. So what's the job of a teacher today? To be a malamed? The kid's not listening to you when you're teaching in Bereshis, Bara, Kimis, Ramavai, Atzaris. He's not listening to you. He doesn't hear one word you say. So what's he doing? He's staring out the window, or he's playing with his friend, or he's bored dead, or he's got real questions. Now, Rabbi, how do we know this is true? How's Rabbi going to answer that question? He knows it's true. What do you mean, how do you know that it's true? Every full Jew knows that it's true. What's the matter with you? You're not victorious? And it's not the Rebbe's fault, because the Rebbe's right. What do you mean, how do you know it's true? It's Pashut. It's not his fault. He doesn't know. No one ever taught him. He never had the question. No one ever taught him. Today, the people that are teaching in schools can't be called Melamdim anymore. They need to be called, what do we call them today? Chanchim. How did that change in Loshon come about? Because the nature of the job's changed. You have to win the heart and the mind of the child. Your job's not to teach him Torah anymore. Your job's to teach him Avos Torah. Your job's not to get through Chumash Bereishis in the first 6 months with Parch Bal Peh. Your job's to make sure when he leaves Cheder he has so much Avos that he wants to start learning. It's a different job. Now, do you need to train somebody to do that? Of course you have to train somebody to do that. So they've started training them, but unfortunately these things take time to catch up. So what do you have to do in the meantime if you have kids and you realize this? You have to hire a private rabbi to teach your kids. Avos Torah. That's what a lot of people are doing. They can't get it to school. They can't get it at school. Forget about it. Now and again you get rabbi. Now and again you daven hard and you start davening now. Don't wait till you're married and you have kids. Start davening now. Okay, but you get a certain siyata dishma, but then again you do get rabbi, and then a mamish that are actually mechanchim. My son's had some unbelievable mechanchim. He's had an unbelievable not mechanchim. There's a word for them, but I don't want to say them.
So you put your kid in
the
situation where all his friends are playing
now,
and he's got an extra hour.
No, you do it in the school time. Some kids can do that. You've got to use your chokhmah. You've got to be very intelligent. Some kids you can do that. But you're out. You can't. So you do it in times when the other kids are learning. You take him out of school. You take him out of there. There's a lot of flexibility in the Torah education system as far as that's concerned. You know, I grew up in school. Now my son's not coming to school this afternoon because he's got his own private little trip going on with some sort of Rebbe, whatever, you know, and they're not covering the syllabus and he's not doing what you're doing in class. I mean, that's unheard of. Yeah, you can do it as much. You can do whatever you want. The one beauty of the system, yeah, is you can get away with whatever you want. So what does it do? It makes you responsible, which is what we've been learning about all the time. You're an Avraham Avinu. There is no system. There is no bigger picture. You have to weigh up each kid, what each kid needs, and you have to try and provide it in a limited environment. At the end of the day, you have to step back and say, okay, there's a thing called Twitter at the end of the day. You've got to. So now, if the father and the son have a kind of relationship where the father can be the Rebbe and can teach his kid or whatever, which is not that usual today, then great. I don't remember. Let it be the father. If the father has time, very often the father's working. The father's, he's got his own things. He's out, he's away, whatever. You're out. If the father can, he can. Not always do the kids want to learn with their fathers. And sometimes breeds resentment when the father's sitting there wanting to learn with his son because that's his nachas and whatever. Revolu once said to me, he said, you can hire someone to learn with your kid, but you can't hire someone to play with your kid. So you play with him and you hire someone to learn with him. Some kids want to learn with their parents, some they don't want to learn with their parents, whatever. Yeah, some people can learn with their parents, some can't. Sometimes the father-son relationship needs to be in other ways. I learned very little with my son, because that's not an area that he's not that into it, you know what I'm saying? By the time he gets home from school and he's done his day, it's enough for it. He's not interested in learning anymore. He's young, he's tired, whatever. As the kids get older, it changes. But in the early ages or whatever, so he doesn't. It's like you said. I just come home from school, I've been there since 8 o'clock in the morning, it's quarter to 7, and now you want me to learn. Yeah, learn. He wants to play a game of cards, he wants to schmooze, he wants to read him a story, he wants to go swimming, he's a kid, he wants to play. The biggest problem facing the kids today is the pressure that they're under. It's not normal. The secular world as well, I mean, it's not just in the Torah world. It's pressure, it's pressure, pressure. It's not good for kids. You've got to remove the pressure. You don't think he wants to go up there?
With the papers? I mean,
where does he get it from? The kids, people are talking because the kids are talking. It's on the street. What do you think when he drives, when he goes on a bus, when he's sitting in a bus and there's a radio? These kids know what's going on. You don't think he has secular cousins and what? We're not living in an immune society.
Well, I don't understand. The strength and beauty of Torah has been going for so many thousands of years. The first opportunity the kids get where they're not forced into staying from and they get the opportunity to go out, that's all they want to do.
Why not? It's been going on since day one. Avraham Avinu's first son did it. Yaakov's first son did it. Yitzhak's first son did it. You deny the existence of a Yetzirah. You deny the existence of the force in the world that is hell bent on making sure that you don't learn Torah. What do you want from me? And it's gonna be challenging. And it's going to be difficult. And it's going to be so difficult that you're not going to know how to solve the problems. Because otherwise, where does Hashem fit in? If we had the answers to all these questions, then what are you Hashem for? The Brisker Rebbe was asked, how did he raise such children? He said, me, what do I know about raising children? I said, lots of Tehillim. That's the first thing you have to know. When you bring up children, it's miracles. It's all based on... you need a lot of Siyata Dishmaya. But remember, your kids are not going to be Bolshevists. Your kids are not going to know how empty that life out there is. They're never going to have to make the decisions that you made to get to where you are and gave up what you gave up and got the Siyata Dishmaya for doing that. At 3 years old, someone's going to put a kip on his head, going to put tzitzis on, going to send him off the cut. You're not the same. You're different. You and him are a different species completely. You're going to try and inspire him, and you're going to try and live, you know, like what you missed out in your youth. You're going to try and insist that he makes up for you. Of course. Yeah, and it depends where you're living. You're going to be bringing up your children in the way that you never grew up. You're going to be dealing with an education system that you never went through. You're never going to know if your kids are doing well in the system or not, because you've got no barometers. If my kid went through the same school system I went through, I would know. Hey, you know, when I was in standard 6, I was doing this and this and this. And this. So he's, you know, but yeah, I don't know what a kid in, you know, kid to bed supposed to be doing. How do I know? So you start asking people, you start checking out, so you have different opinions, you know. Oh Hashem, you know. So then you know, you've got an Amili Smaich, you have no one to rely on except Hashem. Then you cast your burden upon Hashem, and then He supports you, and you dive in and you get Siyata Dishmaya. And you have your Baim, and you ask questions, and you Oh Hashem, it's challenging. Or you can have 1.5 kids and a Maltese poodle, you know, it's also a lifestyle if you want.
I have a picture of in my mind of a friend of mine, you know, when his 5-year-old kid comes and says, you know, Abba, what's going on, you know, in this explosion? Well, you see, first you have to understand the Yud Gimel Karim of Rambam son, and then you
My son's going through an age now where he wants to know. Maybe they're right. How do we know we're right? Maybe they're right. Maybe the Arabs are right. How do we know? Now, I said to him, do it every... I said, they're great questions. I want you to ask those questions. Do me one favor. Not at Cheder. You don't ask those questions in Cheder. There are 1 or 2 rabbis you can ask those questions to, but by and large, they're... And you know, I understand. The kids are very clever. They've been taught to think. You must understand one thing, okay? However bad the system is, it's pretty good. Mm-hmm. These kids have been taught to think from a very early age. They're not robotized. They're not robotized. That's number one. Number two, you have to understand another thing about Torah education. Torah education is about Kedusha. Don't try and understand Torah education using secular educational psychological tools and techniques. We teach our kids Vayikra at the age of 6. You know, our kids are pure and refined, whatever. Take it a brachis. You show me a more sordid, you know, violent piece of work than Tanakh. Yeah? There's Zimri, and there's David HaMelech chopping off people's heads, and there's wars, and there's, I mean, there's a blood, you know, this is, you know, blood and guts, and, you know, illicit relationships all over the place, and he's learning it since he's 6. You take this to the educational psychologist, they tell you, you might, you're going to ruin your child. You're going to teach this to your child. Like three wives, and then he took in a wife, and then the wife gave the maid to have a child. Do you know what's going on there? This is what you teach your children at the age of 6. Are you mad? And then you teach them kabbalas. You bring them in and you let them lick the honey off the, what are you licking? And you shecht it this way and you sprinkle the blood. Yeah, and you, that's what you teach your children. You know what you're going to produce here? And yeah, we look at what we produce. Look at what we produce. You see some of these kids, I mean, it's unbelievable. Our first encounter in learning with an 11-year-old blew my mind. The kid was way more advanced than me intellectually. Not worldly information, but he knew how to think. The guy possibly had been trained how to think. When you're learning Torah with kids, they might not always understand what they're learning or whatever, but you're putting Kedusha into them. The Torah is Kedusha. It's a Kodesh Baruch Hu. They're sitting there and the Rebbe's teaching them Bereishis Bara Elokim Es HaShamayim, whatever. That's Kedusha. It's having an impact on the neshamas. You can't deny that. You can't deny that. It's having an impact. As was, the street out there is an enormous, the Yetzer today is very accessible. He's very, very accessible. In Vilna, in the Shtetlach, in Lithuania, what did the guy represent to you? He was a drunken bum. Do you want to be like him? Who wanted to be like him? Who wants to be like the Polish peasant? Even today, nobody wants to be like a Polish peasant. Who wants to be like that? Well, there was no choice. They didn't have anything more than us. They had what we had. We just had Torah. We had a beautiful lifestyle, and they had vodka. I'm serious. Today, you can't do this. 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 And what out there is razzle dazzle. The Yetzer Hara has developed a system of razzle dazzle, of fantasy that is overwhelming. How does Rav and Abaye compare with that? You take your kids on one of these razzle-dazzle Disney holidays for 3 weeks, okay, and then you get him back and you try and get him to do Abba Abbas Nazikin. How are you going to get them? How are you going to get the kid to sit still? See, they've got a name for it. They call it ADH or whatever, yeah? ADH, ADD, ADD, whatever, yeah, whatever. They've got medication for it and whatever. Okay, fine.
Well, you know, you said the child
is
asking your questions like your son at the moment. So, what's the bottom line if father's not able to answer his son? Those questions are maybe it's a serious lacking in him, but what does he do?
So
can I get someone else that can answer the
question? I don't know. These are good questions. I don't know the answer.
How does that make a father look to his son?
Child respects number one. Child respects it when a father says, "I don't know." Good question. Let's journey together. Let's try and look at it together. Let's try and find out what's going on. Let's see. Very useful thing to say to a child. I don't know. Excellent question. I don't know. Let's try and find out. I look into it. That's an opportunity, by the way, to learn together. Kid has a question. Talmud as well. Talmud has a question. It's a wonderful opportunity to say, let's see. Let's learn the sugya together. That's what the Haggadah teaches us, by the way. The Haggadah teaches us that the way to teach a child is via questions. If he's asking a question, that's a wonderful opportunity to start learning. Yankele, we have to learn now. Kriyas Itim the Torah, come, bring your Mishnahs. You've lost Yankele already. Yankele comes home and he's got a question about how do we know there's a God. Yankele just asked a question, right? What does the God say? Fine. First you evaluate, is he a Chochem, a Tam, a Rosh, a Miriam, sure. And then there's a response. But now you have an opportunity to learn because he asked you a question. If he didn't ask you a question, he's probably not listening to your speech anyway.
Isn't that the way Torah Shabbat players learn all the time?
Of course. That's why you look through it. It's questions, questions, questions. My this, what's this, boom, this. So you have to teach and encourage your kids how to ask questions. So when a kid comes home with his own question, that's something to be celebrated, not, hey, the questions. No, just what you know. You just killed the questionnaire. You don't like the question, so okay, shame it's not a question. But murder the questionnaire. I usually answer those kind of questions with a question. When he comes to me and says, how do we know we're right? I want to know what's really bothering you. Is what's really bothering you whether Yoshka walked on water or not? Is that what's bothering you? Is it bothering you that the way they serve the goes by killing people and blowing up children on the bus? Is that what's bothering you? Maybe they're right and we're wrong? What's bothering you? That's how I left them. Well, what's really bothering you? Well, I want to know, how do we know we're right? No. What's really bothering you? Just think about it for a while. Remember to go back, by the way. Don't ignore it. If you don't know, getting back to your question, if you don't know, say I don't know. Don't try and con your kid into that you know, because they're much cleverer than them. They see through you straight away. He knows that it's okay not to know. He knows the Torah is bigger than you. He knows the world's complex. He knows. By the time he gets to 11, 12, he knows. This is a big, big business. He knows people have been learning for 30, 40 years and they also don't know. It's fine to say I don't know.
So, a lot of cases where the son is a better learner, father.
Yeah. No, I don't know. That's the greatest nachas. The greatest nachas that a father, a rebbe, can get is when his talmidim or his child become greater than him. If the child recognizes that you have so much nachas because he's greater than you and whatever in learning or whatever, and I've seen it, the enormous respect that the kids, I'm telling you, I've seen kids that are mama spitz, shiva spitz, the father's a balabatim yet, whatever, the enormous respect the kids have for their parents. Because I'm a boss on learning, it's not a toll on learning. I have an opportunity that you never had. I respect you because you gave me this opportunity you never had. You facilitated my become great and whatever, and you respect my becoming great. Yeah. A guy becomes a Wimbledon tennis champion or whatever. His father doesn't have a tennis ball, so he doesn't have respect for his father. No, he understands. Whatever. His father was the one that paid for the coaches and helped and, you know, brought him up and got, no. If it's not a problem for the father, if the father's walking around feeling all inadequate because his kid knows more than him or whatever, then it's a problem. But if the father knows, this is who I am, that's my tough kid, that's you, that's your tough kid.
Ideally, you shouldn't be.
On the contrary. There's a very choshev yid, balabas, whatever, he has sons to go to Rosh Hashivas or whatever, it's unbelievable relationships. And now the son, the father's now retired or whatever, he's got time, the son's now teaching the father, he goes and he sits in his son's chair, and very beautiful to see, sits there and he learns from his son, they argue and learn, that's understood, that's fine. The guy's a mensch, he's a mensch.
Question to me that
Master Bolshevik's
son will
possibly attend the university. Of course. You can't catch up to these kids. God, how am I ever going to, I mean, in terms of the knowledge, not so much, yeah, not necessarily on the intellectual skills or whatever. There was a guy that used to learn in Midrash Shmuel, Zayda. Well, today is a big Talmud Chacham. Why did he start learning? Because he didn't have to talk to his grandchildren about it. His kids became Bolshevik's, they're sitting and learning, the grandchildren are sitting and learning. He realized, I can only talk to my kids about it, but he started finding out what they're doing, what do they spend the day doing. So he started learning a bit of Gemara to find out, and his mom just got caught up with it. He learned Rabbi Nyaman's best Talmud in Talmud in Midrash Shmuel. Engineer eventually retired with Teretz Yisrael or whatever, the guy man is just shtagging, because he wants to be able to talk to his grandchildren. It's a crazy world we live in, you have to understand, it's an upside down kind of world. You know, it was unusual that the kid knew more than the father or whatever. Usually, you know, the great Rebbe's son went off to the best Rebbeim, you know, and the water carrier son learned and he became a water carrier like the father. There was much more of a society, was a much more stable kind of environment. Today you can go from nowhere to look, where did we come from? Where did we come from? Learning Achronim, Rishonim, learning Rebbe Akiva Eiger, you've been learning for 3 years. You know, how long it took before you could learn Rebbe Akiva Eiger 50 years ago? Who learned Rebbe Akiva Eiger? The Dayanim, the Rabbonim, which water carrier? I'm saying, today we've been lifted up in enormous Yathir Ishmael, and the kids get it as well. It's unbelievable.
The kids see where we come from and see that as a
when they're younger, I don't know. I've often asked myself the question. I think when they get older, they start to respect it.
What, the
fact that you're about Shuva and whatever. I think it irritates them a little bit in the beginning. When they're young, I just think it irritates them because you're mamish mashuga.
See you as anything other
than
how
they're.
No,
they know what you've done.
They
know what a chiloni is, and they know that you're once a chiloni, whatever that means to them, and they know that you gave up being a chiloni and you were chosen when you became chavadi. Right? And they know that that's something. As a youngster, I don't think they know what it means, but as they get older and they start dealing with their own struggles and whatever, the wonderful thought. When you bring up children, the one thing you have to realize, and I have to recognize this myself, is you don't want them to be what you're trying to make them into now. Very often, it's only going to come out much later. The things you put into them now, you're going to hug the child 50 times, you know, switch off the lights, or pick up your washing, or wash the dishes, or whatever, and they don't listen. That's not because you're a failure. The question is, how's he going to behave when he's 25? And how's he behaving when he's 4? There's a wonderful, it's a positive in Tehillim. It says, Ure vonim levanecha shalom al Israel. When you see children born to your children, there'll be peace in Israel. What's that? Does that make any sense to you? Why will there only be peace in children when I have grandchildren? What's David HaMelech talking about here? Doesn't make any sense. Ure vonim levanecha. We sing it all the time, yeah? Ure vonim levanecha. When you see children born to your children, then there'll be peace in Israel.
So Ure vonim means what?
Ure, when you see vonim.
Children.
Uray, with Yevonim, Levanecho, to your children, Shalom El Yisrael, there will be peace in Israel. What's the chat? What does it mean? We sing it without, but we don't know what it means. What's the chat? So Gottlieb once said a bris. Very beautiful idea. He said like this. When you have grandchildren, what does that mean? It means your children now have children. They now start appreciating what you did for them. Mm. And they start overlooking all the stuff that caused all the friction, the fights or whatever. Now there can be peace. Now there can be peace in the home. Sometimes you have to wait till your kids are in your position for them to really respect what you did. They're not going to respect it now. They don't know what it means. They're not a clue. A concept. How do they know? It's better they don't know. They should never know what it means to crawl out of that gutter and climb up. And they should never know what that is. When will they appreciate it? When they get up and they're old, they're mature, and they can start seeing what it is. But the chinuch the kids get, with all its problems and with all the difficulties, that those difficulties and those problems are also God designed. That's part of the makabalist and the mezahava. And you have to decide. You have to make decisions. Do you want to do it in Eretz Yisrael? You have choices to be made here. Who says you have to do it in Eretz Yisrael? Who says it's the only way? You can do it in Chutz Laaretz. There's a different system. The Torah world and the rules apply different Chutz Laaretz. You know, the ability to train your children in such a way they can make a panosa one day, the ability to learn subjects, secular subjects maybe, which will enable you to deal with them in different ways, teach them science, give them Chutz Laaretz, you can get away with it. Yeah, you want to do it, you've got to do it, you've got to backdoor it a little bit, but who says you shouldn't do it? Let me just switch this off. That's off. Off.